Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. If you're planning to invest in the future of your farm business, we can help you achieve the growth you need. Ulster Bank, help for what matters.
Now, this week, after a lot of negotiations, we got the programme for a partnership government. But is it an exercise in aspiration, or is it a solid document that really charts the direction that this new government is going to follow? We have a number of experts. We're going to talk about economics, social protection, children and the environment. Seamus Coffey from the School of Economics in UCC is examining economic policy for us. Father Peter McVerry, who works with vulnerable young people in Dublin, is looking at social protection and housing. Oisin Coughlan, Director of Friends of the Earth, is talking about environmental policy, and Tanya Ward, the Children's Rights Alliance, is looking at policy surrounding children and young people. We start with the economics, Seamus Coffey. During the campaign, it was all about keeping the recovery going. That language changed. It's now about bringing the recovery to everyone and a fairer society. But in here, in the 150-something pages, is that reflected in the economic policy?
Well, it's definitely in the rhetoric and some of the words that are used, but I'm not quite sure it's there in the specifics. So again, during the campaign, as I say, there would have been a lot on the improvements in the economy. I think to a certain element, some of those improvements are being missold, or maybe people aren't quite believing the overall economic statistics. And in what we have now in this programme for partnership governments, a lot of emphasis on a fair economy, on inequality, without really being defined what it is they're wanting to target. So when it comes to inequality, there's a lot of reference to the minimum wage. But like when it comes to those at risk of poverty and inequality, actually those in employment in Ireland fare better than almost any other country in Europe. It's not really a problem with those in employment we have. It's more a problem with those that are not in employment. And there doesn't seem to be much focus on that.
Is there much by way of detail, by way of costings?
Close to nothing. Like, if you look at what's in it, there's a lot of aspiration, and we intend to do this, and we'd like to do that, and we'll focus on this, or we'll look at that, without actually saying what will eventually be done. A lot of problems are addressed, but real concrete solutions are absent. So they're sort of saying these are what our priorities are, but they're not telling us yet how they're going to go about addressing them.
And we are still borrowing to pay for whatever it is we're going to do.
Yeah, from a purely economic perspective, and say, look, well, what should we be fixing? Well, one thing we have to fix still is the deficit. Department of Finance themselves published an update there about a fortnight ago, which showed that this year our deficit will be about €2.5 billion. And next year, before any budget or any government decisions are made, we'll be borrowing €1 billion. So any tax changes or any expenditure increases will simply increase the amount of money we're borrowing next year. So what we're discussing is it worthwhile borrowing money for these purposes? Like, we had a deficit that opened in 2008, and the programme for government said it won't be closed for 11 years, 2018, since the deficit opened. So from an economic perspective, closing the deficit has to remain a priority. Yes, the economy is growing, and yes, there are additional resources there, but some of them do still need to be used to cut that deficit down.
I know you're interested in capital spending as well. I'll come back to you about that in a minute. But Peter McVerry, if we are going to borrow, I'm sure you'd like to see that money spent well, and you'd like to see it spent on housing. There is a priority now in this programme for government around housing and around homelessness. Are you, at this stage, you'll have to wait to see the devil in the detail, I suppose, but are you happy that at least perhaps this government finally gets it about this crisis?
I think so. I think it has come to the top of the agenda in many respects. They have set up an Oireachtas committee, and that was done very, very rapidly, and they do intend to look at the recommendations of that committee. So I think the whole issue has finally become very obvious to the politicians. This is an urgent area that they really do have to do something about very, very quickly, because if they don't do something about it very quickly, it's only going to get much, much worse.
Do you believe that the decisions, and you have said tough decisions need to be made and need to be implemented quickly, do you believe that there is an impetus now to not just talk the talk but walk the walk?
Well, I think there is. We do have quite a considerable left-wing element now in the Dáil, and I think they will not tolerate the sort of policies that perhaps we have become used to from a right-wing government. I think, the former government was on the side of the banks. It was on the side of the wealthy. The decisions that have to be taken, it seems to me, to address this crisis are going to annoy the banks, going to annoy the local authorities, going to annoy those who have property, because I think we have to, first of all, simply prevent the banks from evicting people into homelessness. I think that is absolutely immoral and unacceptable. I know one family evicted 2 years ago from their house, and they still passed their former home 2 years later, and it's still boarded up. Absolutely, it's horrific. I think we have to prevent the banks from doing that and the vulture funds from doing that.
And the other thing that you've always said, Father McFerry, was that you needed an increase in the rent allowance, and indeed we got new figures about rentals and the lack of rentals this week. There is a promise of an increase, a 15% increase, I think, in rent allowance. Will it help?
I'm a bit worried about that increase, because actually the rent supplement, the rent allowance, has been decreased by 28% since the recession began, but rents are back to their pre-recession level. So there's actually a 28% gap between the rent allowance and what is necessary to pay the rents being demanded. My fear is that the 15% will cost the taxpayer a lot of money and will not achieve its objective of helping people to stay in their accommodation. So I'm prepared to wait and see what happens there, but I do have a very, very real fear that it's not going to work.
Oisín Coughlan, you're the Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth. Who's the Minister now that you would tic-tac with, or are you sure? Who's the Minister for the Environment?
Well, that's a very good question, Mary. Just about this time last Friday, the Taoiseach got up and said he was realigning the departments of government to better reflect the new government's priorities, and promptly abolished the Department of Environment. And environmental functions are now spread across three departments. So Nature and Wildlife Protection are with Heather Humphreys, Planning and Water are with Simon Coveney, and Waste and Air Pollution, including Climate Change, are with Dennis Nocton. None of them have environment or indeed heritage in the title of the departments. And there's no section in the programme for government on environment. So this is really environmental vandalism, we think, and they need to be reintegrated under one minister. We think probably that's the department that Dennis Nocton has. It should become a department for environment and climate action.
But he's got communications, hasn't he, and something else in there as well?
He does have communications. Perhaps, I know you referenced earlier on, there's now a concern that broadband split between two departments. Perhaps communications should go to Heather Humphreys. But certainly it's totally incoherent to have these functions spread across three departments. Who will they send to European Union meetings, for example? It's just 6 months since the Taoiseach signed the UN's new Sustainable Development Goals for 2030 for all the countries of the world. And it's about balancing economic, social and environmental progress. And 6 months later, he abolishes the Minister for the Environment.
We've had a lot of talk during the negotiations, before the negotiations even commenced, about turf cutting, about wind turbines. Have you a concern that local issues have been prioritised to do deals over wider economic debate?
Well, certainly, if you were an outsider, you might, when you heard the programme for government negotiations were held up by turf and wind, you might think that's about not burning more turf and about having more renewable energy, when in fact the concerns were in some ways the reverse. Although there are legitimate community concerns, and of course the biggest damage to the turf and to peat is not done by local cutters, it's done by the ESB in Bordnamona. We still burn 3 million tons of peat every year for electricity. It gives us only 9% of electricity, but more than a quarter of our pollution. So that the programme for government is bad on peat at the big level. It says it wants to extend the life of the peat plants by having them burn other things as well as peat, which would just keep those bogs open and leaching pollution for much longer. Mm. So are they really going to keep the peat stations open even without subsidies? We subsidise them now to €120 million a year. We need to plan to close them and provide alternative employment using that money to invest in local communities in the next 5 years. And on the broader issue of wind energy, the programme for government is actually quite good on the issue of community participation in energy, broadening up this transition away from fossil fuels to renewables so that communities can have a role, not just getting handouts from companies, but actually owning their own energy. And we've got a lovely sunny day today. Ireland has a huge solar potential in the summer with long daylight hours. There's no payment for solar, and the programme for government has no commitment to that. If we had that, and lots of other countries have it, no big subsidy, just a payment, that means it becomes viable to put them on your schools, your sports clubs, your parish halls, and all those things can become community-owned power plants. plants. And that changes the whole debate and the whole feeling we have about renewable energy.
Tanya Ward from the Children's Rights Alliance is with us as well. You were with us on Wednesday, Tanya, when you sounded the alarm bells around that those few lines that were in the programme for government, which you feared was linking child benefit to school attendance. There's been a lot of furore around it since, and I think it's now gone.
That just seems to be the case. I think publicly, as the debate moved on, it was clear that it was more about potential welfare fraud and the child benefit system. And the government did seem to move away from this particular commitment. And to be honest, it was at odds with what's in the programme for government more generally, because it's very good in the area of education and very good in the area of educational disadvantage.
Talk to me about what's good in there.
Well, you know, overall, the programme for government for children, it's a bit like a roadmap of headlines with some specific commitments. But let's say education, for example, it talks about publishing an action plan for educational inclusion within 12 months. I mean, that's very manageable. We have a review of the disadvantaged education school scheme at the moment. That's nearing completion. And we know that the DESH schools actually work to address educational disadvantage, and we need to extend that scheme. It's also talking about school completion, would you believe? It's suggesting that there should be a new school completion strategy, and I think that's very welcome. And it's also talking about strengthening parental choice and diversity within our education system, because we know, particularly at the primary school level, children and families don't have the choice that they need when it comes to education provision. I think there's some very good proposals in health as well. It's talking about free GP care for children and young people up to the age of 18. And it's also talking about establishing a national task force on youth mental health to look at resilience and coping mechanisms and making sure there are greater access to voluntary services. Now, it doesn't single out suicide prevention as such. I'm hoping that does come up under that task force. And it doesn't single out the issue where children at the moment are being detained in adult psychiatric units, sometimes up to 30% of children that need psychiatric care. That's not listed in the programme for government, but I am hoping that it is dealt with by that task force. But in the area of children more generally, we finally have good commitments when it comes to early years provision. You know, Ireland is way out of step with other EU countries. Parents are paying huge amounts of money to get access to preschool and early years provision. So it's and the quality of what's being provided for children does vary hugely. So there's a focus in this programme for government on quality and professionalisation of the sector and making childcare places more affordable and accessible.
Quick question, Tanya, families. Before I go back to Seamus Coffey. Is any of what you're talking about there costed?
It's not costed, okay. No. There wouldn't be any costings available. But I would say a lot of it is achievable. I mean, there's a lot of work already done by the government departments in moving these issues. So I do think it's achievable by the current government.
Seamus Coffey, is it down to an improved fiscal space, or will they be borrowing more to do and realise a lot of what's in here?
I think for the next couple of years, the plan will be that further funds will be borrowed. Like, obviously, as the economy grows, it will create additional resources, but we still have some of the legacy problems. And even once we get the deficit down, we still have the quite large debt that's there. And as a proportion of the economy, we must continue to bring that down. But I think there's no doubt that there is scope to do something, whatever phraseology you want to use. Mm-hmm. But even as the economy improves, like, we must devote resource to what we're already doing. Like, the cost of what we're doing at the moment is going to increase if there's inflation. Public sector pay would have to be increased in line with that at a minimum. You'd expect social welfare to be increased in line with that, and you'd have to make adjustments to the tax system to compensate for inflation. And all that is going to eat up some of the resources that the economy is creating.
And you want an increase in capital spending.
So if there's something left after all that, then we should be focused on looking at capital spending, because that's the one area that took the heaviest hits during the crash, because I suppose with capital spending, the victims don't know who they are. If they don't build a school, like, who knew it was going to be there in the first place, or don't provide a road, or don't improve water infrastructure, it's quite difficult for people to get excited about that, because you're not taking something from them, like public sector pay cuts or cuts to social welfare. And so the cuts to capital spending over the last couple of years, like, they are beginning to have an impact. The infrastructure, the transport infrastructure, we still have raw sewage flowing into our waterways, and even the provision of water is struggling in some some areas. So capital spending should be where we should focus on, rather than massive increases in current expenditure, which got us into problems before.
All right. One final point to Peter McFerry, and it's around, we know that we have employment is growing, the numbers unemployed coming down, but we still have a real problem with youth unemployment, Peter McFerry. Do you see anything in here in terms of helping young people to access jobs and to access training?
Nothing specifically for young people. We have a huge, huge problem of youth unemployment, and that really can blight the lives of young people for a long time to come. If you remain unemployed for a long time, getting the motivation, getting the up and go to return to work can become it can become much more difficult. Now, I think a huge number of countries within the EU have the same problem, and I think that's building up huge difficulties for the whole EU in the future. We are going to have a very alienated young population who feel no commitment, no loyalty whatever to the institutions. I think that can be very problematic for Ireland as well as for other EU countries.
Peter McFerry, thank you. Thank you too to Seamus Coffey, Tanya Ward and Oisín Coughlin.